On the second day, the boy climbed to the top of a cliff near the camp. The sentinels allowed him to go. They had already heard about the sorcerer who could turn himself into the wind, and they didn't want to go near him. In any case, the desert was impassable. He spent the entire afternoon of the second day looking out over the desert and listening to his heart. The boy knew the desert sensed his fear. They both spoke the same language. On the third day, the chief met with his officers. He called the alchemist to the meeting and said, "Let's go and see the boy who turns himself into the wind."
"Let's," the alchemist answered.
The boy took them to the cliff where he had been on the previous day. He told them all to be seated.
"It's going to take a while," the boy said.
"We're in no hurry," the chief answered. "We are men of the desert."
The boy looked out at the horizon. There were mountains in the distance, and there were dunes, rocks, and plants that insisted on living where survival seemed impossible. There was the desert that he had wandered for so many months. Despite all that time, he knew only a small part of it. Within that small part, he had found an Englishman, caravans, tribal wars, and an oasis with 50,000 palm trees and 300 wells.
"What do you want here today?" the desert asked him. "Didn't you spend enough time looking at me yesterday?"
"Somewhere, you are holding the person I love," the boy said. "So when I look out over your sands, I'm also looking at her. I want to return to her. And I need your help so that I can turn myself into the wind."
"What is love?" the desert asked.
"Love is the falcon's flight over your sands. Because for him, you are a green field from which he always returns with game. He knows your rocks, your dunes, and your mountains, and you are generous to him."
"The falcon's beak carries bits of me myself," the desert said. "For years I care for his game, feeding it with the little water that I have, and then I show him where the game is, and one day, as I enjoy the fact that his game thrives on my surface, the falcon dives out of the sky and takes away what I've created."
"But that's why you created the game in the first place," the boy answered, "to nourish the falcon. And the falcon then nourishes man. And eventually, man will nourish your sands, where the game will once again flourish. That's how the world goes."
"So is that what love is?"
"Yes, that's what love is. It's what makes the game become the falcon become the man, and man, in his turn, the desert. It's what turns lead into gold and makes the gold return to the earth."
"I don't understand what you're talking about," the desert said.
"But you can at least understand that somewhere in your sands there is a woman waiting for me, and that's why I have to turn myself into the wind." The desert didn't answer him for a few moments. Then it told him,
"I'll give you my sands to help the wind to blow, but alone I can't do anything. You have to ask help from the wind."
A breeze began to blow. The tribesmen watched the boy from a distance, talking among themselves in a language that the boy couldn't understand. The alchemist smiled. The wind approached the boy and touched his face. It knew of the boy's talk with the desert because the winds know everything. They blow across the world without a birthplace and with no place to die.
"Help me," the boy said.
"One day you carried the voice of my loved one to me."
"Who taught you to speak the language of the desert and the wind?"
"My heart," the boy answered. The wind has many names. In that part of the world, it was called the Sirocco, because it brought moisture from the oceans to the east. In the distant land the boy came from, they called it the Levanter, because they believed that it brought with it the sands of the desert and the screams of the Moorish wars. Perhaps, in the places beyond the pastures where his sheep lived, men thought that the wind came from Andalusia. But actually, the wind came from no place at all, nor did it go to any place. That's why it was stronger than the desert. Someone might one day plant trees in the desert and even raise sheep there, but never would they harness the wind.
"You can't be the wind," the wind said. "We're two very different things."
"That's not true," the boy said. "I learned the alchemist's secrets in my travels. I have inside me the winds, the deserts, the oceans, the stars, and everything created in the universe. We were all made by the same hand, and we all have the same soul. I want to be like you, able to reach every corner of the world, cross the seas, blow away the sands that cover my treasure, and carry the voice of the woman I love.
I heard what you were talking about the other day with the alchemist, the wind said. He said that everything has its own personal legend, but people can't turn themselves into the wind.
Just teach me to be the wind for a few moments, the boy said, so you and I can talk about the limitless possibilities of people and the winds. The wind's curiosity was aroused, something that had never happened before. It wanted to talk about those things, but it didn't know how to turn a man into the wind. And look how many things the wind already knew how to do. It created deserts, sank ships, felled entire forests, and blew through cities filled with music and strange noises. It felt that it had no limits, yet here was a boy saying that there were other things the wind should be able to do. This is what we call love, the boy said, seeing that the wind was close to granting what he requested. When you're loved, you can do anything in creation. When you are loved, there's no need at all to understand what's happening, because everything happens within you, and even men can turn themselves into the wind, as long as the wind helps, of course. The wind was a proud being, and it was becoming irritated with what the boy was saying. It commenced to blow harder, raising the desert sands. But finally, it had to recognize that, even making its way around the world, it didn't know how to turn a man into the wind. And it knew nothing about love.
In my travels round the world, I've often seen people speaking of love and looking towards the heavens, the wind said, furious at having to acknowledge its own limitations. Maybe it's better to ask heaven.
Well then, help me to do that, the boy said. Fill this place with a sandstorm so strong that it blots out the sun. Then I can look to heaven without blinding myself.
So the wind blew with all its strength, and the sky was filled with sand. The sun was turned into a golden disk. At the camp, it was difficult to see anything. The men of the desert were already familiar with that wind. They called it the Simum, and it was worse than a storm at sea. Their horses cried out, and all their weapons were filled with sand. On the heights, one of the commanders turned to the chief and said,
"Maybe we'd better end this."
They could barely see the boy. Their faces were covered with the blue cloths, and their eyes showed fear.
"Let's stop this," another commander said. "I want to see the greatness of Allah," the chief said, with respect. "I want to see how a man turns himself into the wind."
But he made a mental note of the names of the two men who had expressed their fear. As soon as the wind stopped, he was going to remove them from their commands, because true men of the desert are not afraid.
"The wind told me that you know about love," the boy said to the sun. "If you know about love, you must also know about the soul of the world, because it's made of love."
"From where I am," the sun said, "I can see the soul of the world. It communicates with my soul, and together we cause the plants to grow and the sheep to seek out shade. From where I am, and I'm a long way from the earth, I learned how to love. I know that if I came even a little bit closer to the earth, everything there would die, and the soul of the world would no longer exist. So we contemplate each other, and we want each other, and I give it life and warmth, and it gives me my reason for living."
"So you know about love," the boy said.
"And I know the soul of the world, because we've talked at great lengths to each other during this endless trip through the universe. It tells me that its greatest problem is that, up until now, only the minerals and vegetables understand that all things are one. That there's no need for iron to be the same as copper, or copper the same as gold. Each performs its own exact function as a unique being, and everything would be a symphony of peace if the hand that wrote all this had stopped on the fifth day of creation. But there was a sixth day," the sun went on.
"You are wise because you observe everything from a distance," the boy said.
But you don't know about love. If there hadn't been a sixth day, man would not exist. Copper would always be just copper and lead just lead. It's true that everything has its personal legend, but one day that personal legend will be realized. So each thing has to transform itself into something better and to acquire a new personal legend until someday the soul of the world becomes one thing only. The sun thought about that and decided to shine more brightly. The wind, which was enjoying the conversation, started to blow with greater force so that the sun would not blind the boy. "This is why alchemy exists," the boy said. "So that everyone will search for his treasure, find it, and then want to be better than he was in his former life. Lead will play its role until the world has no further need for lead, and then lead will have to turn itself into gold. That's what alchemists do. They show that when we strive to become better than we are, everything around us becomes better too."
"Well, why did you say that I don't know about love?" the son asked the boy.
"Because it's not love to be static like the desert, nor is it love to roam the world like the wind. And it's not love to see everything from a distance like you do. Love is the force that transforms and improves the soul of the world. When I first reached through to it, I thought the soul of the world was perfect. But later I could see that it was like other aspects of creation and had its own passions and wars. It is we who nourish the soul of the world, and the world we live in will be either better or worse, depending on whether we become better or worse. And that's where the power of love comes in, because when we love, we always strive to become better than we are."
"So what do you want of me?" the son asked.
"I want you to help me turn myself into the wind," the boy answered.
"Nature knows me as the wisest being in creation," the sun said. "But I don't know how to turn you into the wind."
"Then whom should I ask?" The sun thought for a minute. The wind was listening closely and wanted to tell every corner of the world that the sun's wisdom had its limitations, that it was unable to deal with this boy who spoke the language of the world.
"But speak to the hand that wrote all," said the sun.
The wind screamed with delight and blew harder than ever. The tents were being blown from their ties to the earth, and the animals were being freed from their tethers. On the cliff, the men clutched at each other as they sought to keep from being blown away. The boy turned to the hand that wrote all. As he did so, he sensed that the universe had fallen silent, and he decided not to speak. A current of love rushed from his heart, and the boy began to pray. It was a prayer that he'd never said before, because it was a prayer without words or pleas. His prayer didn't give thanks for his sheep having found new pastures. It didn't ask that the boy be able to sell more crystal. And it didn't beseech that the woman he had met continue to await his return. In the silence, the boy understood that the desert, the wind, and the sun were also trying to understand the signs written by the hand, and were seeking to follow their paths, and to understand what had been written on a single emerald. He saw that omens were scattered throughout the earth and in space, and that there was no reason or significance attached to their appearance. He could see that not the deserts, nor the winds, nor the sun, nor people knew why they had been created, but that the hand had a reason for all of this, and that only the hand could perform miracles, or transform the sea into a desert, or a man into the wind, because only the hand understood that it was a larger design that had moved the universe to the point at which 6 days of creation had evolved into a masterwork. The boy reached through to the soul of the world and saw that it was a part of the soul of God. And he saw that the soul of God was his own soul, and that he, a boy, could perform miracles.
The simum blew that day as it had never blown before. For generations thereafter, the Arabs recounted the legend of a boy who had turned himself into the wind, almost destroying a military camp in defiance of the most powerful chief in the desert. When the simum ceased to blow, everyone looked to the place where the boy had been, but he was no longer there. He was standing next to a sand-covered sentinel on the far side of the camp. The men were terrified at his sorcery, but there were two people who were smiling. The alchemist, because he had found his perfect disciple, and the chief, because that disciple had understood the glory of God. The following day, the general bade the boy and the alchemist farewell, and provided them with an escort party to accompany them as far as they chose. They rode for the entire day. Toward the end of the afternoon, they came upon a Coptic monastery. The alchemist dismounted and told the escorts they could return to the camp.
"From here on, you will be alone," the alchemist said. "You are only 3 hours from the pyramids."
"Thank you," said the boy. "You taught me the language of the world."
"I only invoked what you already knew."
The alchemist knocked on the gate of the monastery. A monk dressed in black came to the gates. They spoke for a few minutes in the Coptic tongue, and the alchemist bade the boy enter.
"I asked him to let me use the kitchen for a while," the alchemist smiled.
They went to the kitchen at the back of the monastery. The alchemist lighted the fire, and the monk brought in some lead, which the alchemist placed in an iron pan. When the lead had become liquid, the alchemist took from his pouch the strange yellow egg. He scraped from it a sliver as thin as a hair, wrapped it in wax, and added it to the pan in which the lead had melted. The mixture took on a reddish colour, almost the colour of blood. The alchemist removed the pan from the fire and set it aside to cool. As he did so, he talked with the monk about the tribal wars.
"I think they're going to last for a long time," he said to the monk.
The monk was irritated. The caravans had been stopped at Giza for some time, waiting for the wars to end.
"But God's will be done," the monk said.
"Exactly," answered the alchemist.
When the pan had cooled, the monk and the boy looked at it, dazzled. The lead had dried into the shape of the pan, but it was no longer lead. It was gold. "Will I learn to do that someday?" the boy asked.
"This was my personal legend, not yours," the alchemist answered. "But I wanted to show you that it was possible."
They returned to the gates of the monastery. There, the alchemist separated the disc into 4 parts.
"This is for you," he said, holding one of the parts out to the monk. "It's for your generosity to the pilgrims."
"But this payment goes well beyond my generosity," the monk responded.
"Don't say that again. Life might be listening, and give you less the next time."
The alchemist turned to the boy.
"This is for you, to make up for what you gave to the general."
The boy was about to say that it was much more than he had given to the general, but he kept quiet because he had heard what the alchemist said to the monk.
"And this is for me," said the alchemist, keeping one of the parts, "because I have to return to the desert where there are tribal wars."
He took the 4th part and handed it to the monk.
"This is for the boy, if he ever needs it."
"But I'm going in search of my treasure," the boy said. "I'm very close to it now."
"And I'm certain you'll find it," the alchemist said.
"Then why this?"
"Because you have already lost your savings twice, once to the thief and once to the general. I'm an old, superstitious Arab, and I believe in our proverbs. There's one that says, everything that happens once can never happen again. But everything that happens twice will surely happen a 3rd time.
They mounted their horses.